now we'd like to open the floor to you, whatever questions you have or comments or anything you really want to say to Nikesh. We have a roving mic going around.
Anything within reason.
Yeah, I mean, within polite company.
Don't call me a dickhead.
You can. But you'd have to respond. Yeah. So we have a roving mic around. If you have a question, if you raise your hand, we'd be very happy to hear from you. Are there any questions or comments or things you'd like to ask?
Oh, no, I just put my hand up.
False alarm.
I think we may have solved all of the problems in the world.
Yeah, oh, no.
One problem left.
Yeah, sorry. My name is Muhammad Dahiru. I'm a research student at Leeds Beckett University. And my question is not related to race, but to you as a writer. When did it click in you that you are a writer? When did you have that click that, yes, I am a writer?
It's an interesting question. Well, maybe not that interesting. Maybe it is. I spent a lot of my 20s as a very average rapper. And I was always writing on the side, and I never took either of them seriously. Like I always did them both kind of haphazardly. And I was working on a book of poetry just around the time I realized I was not a very good rapper, which is quite a hard thing to take, because rap is all about ego and bravado, and so to admit to yourself that you're average, not that you're terrible, but that you're average, that you're okay, that's worse than being terrible. And I was working on this book of poetry because I felt more comfortable writing spoken word than I did rapping, and I realized I was much more comfortable experimenting on the page and trying to get the page right rather than trying to do it like by shouting into a microphone rhythmically. And yeah, so working on that bit of poetry kind of clicked for me.
Any other questions?
This is an awkward silence.
It is an awkward silence. Well, I still have loads of questions for you.
Number one, how do you sleep at night? Number two, how dare you? So that's my favorite quote from the American Office. Sorry.
I don't think most of us are familiar with that. This, between this and Wu-Tang Clan, like you're a really niche kind of pop cultural outlet. I know I was wondering what kind of response you've gotten, because I know you've been writing things in The Guardian, you've been on BBC talking about the Good Immigrant Project, kind of doing a more sort of, I don't want to say public intellectual, but a more mainstream kind of thing.
Definitely not intellectual.
No. But what sort of response have you gotten from that?
From all the stuff I've been doing, it's been wildly varying between, you know, people really, really responding to it and sort of amplifying it with their own, like, very positive and very negative. I think I recently got verified on Twitter because I think my account was at identified as potentially like one that could be trolled quite a lot, because I talk quite outspoken about race and immigration issues and also about diversity, like not just in books but in film and TV, and like there has been this sort of growing amount of trolling that I've been getting online from people who call me everything from a racist to a paedophile, and it's really horrible, because like on the other end of the spectrum you have people saying really, really nice supportive things about the stuff that I'm doing, but I guess you kind of have to take both of them, right? Like you can't. And it kind of goes back to that thing I was saying about making people uncomfortable. Like I've made someone feel uncomfortable and they've kind of lashed out, so maybe I'm doing the right thing. But it does come in some sort of like weird personal cost, because then I end up just spending days of like filled with anxiety about whether I should go on the internet or not.
And so one of the things that I didn't mention before is that you were named one of Booksellers Rising Stars this year.
Yeah.
And do you think that's affected the way you've been received by people?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I don't know if that is kind of a celebration of the stuff that I've done, or kind of, I don't know. I think that alongside a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about has maybe made certain publishing houses like think twice about working with me, because I am quite outspoken, and like if I come to them with a book, and like am I going to allow myself, like I think there is this potentially this perception that I might be a bit too honest with an editor or with a publicist, because I have been really, really honest with publicists in the past, where I've kind of said, don't just get me ethnic press, I can do that. I'm a firm believer, having come up from the DIY scene, that like you kind of, it's only ever worth having like an agent or a manager or a publicist or whoever to make phone calls that or like send emails that you can't send, or make phone calls that you can't make, and I can do all that stuff. Like I can call up BBC Asian Network, but I want you to get me something else that isn't just that. I want to be bigger than that, but also I can talk to people from Asian Network and talk to them on a level that you can't.
Are there any questions for anyone in the audience? Yes.
Thank you. Marianne Gournay, I just wanted to know, what were the biggest challenges you experienced while writing the book? And also you spoke quite a lot about authenticity. So how did you deal with keeping that authentic voice all the way through?
With The Good Immigrant?
Yeah.
Because it's 21 writers, the challenge, I was the challenge. I had to get out of the way of the writers as much as I could and edit them to the best of their abilities, and not try and put myself, like I try and talk through them in any way. And I think, you know, there were some instances where I definitely felt like I'm getting too involved in this. This needs to be your voice, and it is quite hard to, you know, when like, because writing is quite solitary, and I this was the first like big thing that I had edited. But luckily, like my day job, I work at a magazine based here called Rife Magazine, which is a youth magazine. I spend a lot of time working with young people to get the best out of them that they can do, rather than the best that I can do. And I think that kind of helped me to do that. But then when you're dealing with some like really like heavy and uncomfortable content, I've said it like four times now by accident, but yeah, getting out of the way was my biggest challenge.
Thank you. Hi. I don't know if I said hi. I'm so ghosty. Hi. I wondered if the role of editor felt different to the role of writer, and if, you know, I know the book hasn't quite come out, but at this time it's liberating to feel no qualm in shouting about the book at the top of your voice, which I think writers often kind of have a sort of hesitancy to around publication.
Yeah, it's much easier to say that the book is amazing because I didn't write much of it. And I can see that it's an amazing piece of work, but it's an amazing work despite me, which I think is really important. Like, and I think the difficulty of being a writer kind of straying into editing so many different voices is sort of understanding other people's syntax and rhythm and sentence structure and words and the stories that they want to tell is quite challenging, because like especially the people in the book who aren't traditional writers, so like Himesh and Riz, they're not writers, they're actors, you know. So but they're still storytellers, and they have a very particular way of telling stories. And so I kind of have it like really getting out of the way enough to ensure that they're telling their stories was really difficult, and it was a massive learning curve.
I've read about 2/3 of the essays in there, and I think you've done that brilliantly, because the voices are so, no pun intended, diverse. Like it is incredible. It's just the tone from one essay to the next varies enormously, but they all work so well as a whole. So yeah, massive congratulations.
Thanks. The interesting thing is like, ordering the book was a job in itself. It was like putting a mixtape together, because you kind of have to really think about the flow of it as a book, because each writer works on their individual essay, but then you kind of have to piece it all together so that you can read each essay in isolation, but if you read it from cover to cover chronologically, then it does take you on a journey. So, and you know, so things that are seeded in essays earlier on are then unpicked a bit more thoroughly in essays further down the line and things like that. And that was quite a job as well.
I think there'll be a question somewhere in what I say, so just bear with me because I'm trying to sort of think it through. A lot of the reference points you had were African-American, which is quite interesting. You referenced Ta-Nehisi Coates, Claudia Rankine, the Wu-Tang Clan. And I think for many of us here, when we think about race and racism, we think about the US, it's easier. And also in sort of educational system here, we don't learn so much about the black and minority ethnic experience in this country. It's easier to say racism is in the US, and here, you know, everything's fine. So I think it's really interesting what you've done is to sort of reorientate us and make us think about a British space. But at the same time, your work is clearly in conversation to some extent or influenced by the African-American experience. So I just wondered if you could maybe speak a little bit more about your own influences in terms of, you know, the US space. And then also about the British space, because, I mean, there's... especially in Bristol as well, you know, the history here and within this country and the role of Britain and so on, and empire and slavery and so on and so forth. So I think it's really interesting that we're sort of speaking about this space and what's happening here and just thinking about other things like, you know, Black Lives Matter in the US, now Black Lives Matter in the UK, and these conversations that are taking place across the Atlantic. So that's sort of like just some things I wanted to throw out there and see if there's anything you sort of can respond to.
Yeah, I completely. I've been so influenced by American culture, and like I grew up in the 90s, and there was so much more. There was so much more representation of people who were other on American TV that was then shown over here, and in books that I was reading then I've had at the time, and so like, you know, I didn't have any Asian role models. Which is probably why when I was between the ages of 13 and 16, I had a really problematic relationship with gangster rap. And I think my cultural influences have always been quite American. And like even the sitcom, like as a comedy writer, the sitcoms I cite whenever I go into meetings with TV people are always American and not English. And I think it's because... I think England, like Britain, is probably a bit worse than America in terms of good representation in our art, and so you kind of look to America, and like, and I'm not saying it's perfect; it's far from perfect there, but I don't know what my point is, but yeah, reading those two books last year, and I read them on purpose because I was like, I need to read these books. I need to try and understand what's going on in America that isn't just like stuff that I'm seeing on social media or articles. I really wanted to read like works of art and literature, and when people were comparing Ta-Nehisi Coates to James Baldwin, who is quite a formative person that I read when I went to university, I had to read it. And yeah, like so much of the reason for putting the book together was there is nothing like that here. There's been some great short story collections. Like there was a brilliant short story collection in like the late 90s called IC3, which was amazing. And then last year there was... there's a book of short stories by BAME writers called Closure, which I think was out on People Tree Press, maybe. But that's pretty much it. And so I really wanted to do something that was non-fiction, that was about now, that was featuring this as many different voices as I could find. And hopefully I've done a good job of it. And hopefully it can be part of the changing of the conversation.
So we have time for about one more question, if there are any more questions from the audience. Yes.
Hi. I'm looking forward to reading your book, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
But I wanted to ask, just said about, was the last thing that you said about, remind me what you said, the last bit? My question was based on that now.
Changing the conversation.
Yeah. Because I think your book is going to bring about that changing conversation and the reality of what... how we're perceived in Bristol society. I'm going to say Bristol, Britain, whatever it is. And it's nice to have that discussed because, like you said, it hasn't been done before. Do you think this is something that could be taken into schools or something that could be, Black History Month is just around the corner. And you were just saying about it's focusing on African-American kind of agenda. Do you think that's something that's possible?
So one of the things that I... So, okay, just to unpick some of the... So Unbound, the publisher that put it out, they fund the initial print run comes from the 100% of the funding that we get, and then everything from 100% onwards becomes a profit share with the author. And we had quite a bit of money to raise because I wanted to make sure that all the contributors were paid. But we got to about 150%, and I thought we're going to get to nearly 200% funding. And what I want to do, and this was in the run-up to the referendum, so we were kind of seeing all the horrendous like stuff that Farage was doing and Boris Johnson was doing. I decided that I didn't want to take a profit share until we got to 200% because I wanted to freeze some of that budget so we could tour. In October we're going to loads of literary festivals like Cheltenham and Birmingham and all those places, but that's a very specific crowd. And we're going because they can pay for us to be there and they can pay our train fares and offer us accommodation if we need it. But it's a very specific crowd. But the places that need like these writers to go to is like independent bookshops and libraries and small towns and schools that can't afford us. So I said if we freeze budget, we then have a tour budget where we can like go basically, I will come or like one to three of us will come and do like a reading in a school or in a library and just do something a bit more community based because that's where the real work is. Like we can go and do a thing at Cheltenham Literature Festival, but that's just going to be talking to like a middle class literary crowd, maybe even preaching to the converted. I don't know. Whereas if we go into a school and kids, you know, be they black or white or Asian or minority ethnic, they get to see positive representations of people of colour, then, you know, if you are if you are BAME, then that person is a role model. And if you're not, if you're white British, then you get to interact with someone who is a role model in a really, really positive way. So yeah, that we do want to do that basically. Like it's not just a book that I'm doing for ego's sake. It's a book that's kind of like I'm sort of feeling the weight of it, and I want to do something proper with it.
So we have just about come to the end of our time, but before we go, I will remind you, you can purchase the book if you'd like. You're under no obligation to do so. If you enjoyed hearing from Nikesh today, you're in luck, because he's doing another event next week on Friday at Waterstones in the galleries in Broadmead. That is a ticketed event by Bristol Festival of Ideas, but I do believe two of the other SAS will be there.
Three.
So four.
So next week it's going to be me and Darren Shetty, who was a primary school teacher, and he's written a lot about inclusion in children's books and his time as a primary school teacher. Coco Khan, who is the culture editor for a magazine called Complex, and she's written about what it's like to be a single brown Muslim girl dating and having one-night stands. And Himesh Patel, who is Tamar of EastEnders, he is talking about how he was the only Asian in the village when he was growing up, and his dad ran the corner shop in a rural Cambridgeshire village, and it's a really, really warm, lovely story about that time. And we're doing that, and you know, because I'm true to my word, we're going to a school in the afternoon before we go and do Waterstones, because I think that's important. But yeah, that's at Waterstones next Friday.
Yeah, so if you're interested, if you check out the Bristol Festival of Ideas webpage, you can get tickets there for that. And just please join me in thanking you, Nikesh. That was really fascinating. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thanks.
Here for a while, and it should be awkward. Should we sit here awkwardly?
Only in silence.
Yeah, only in silence.